Ars Electronica, 2006. Simplicity, the art of complexity.
Good morning. Could I have my computer up, please? Okay. So, as Karen mentioned, I'm obviously not Paul de Marinis, but so I speak with my own voice. I have known Paul for about 15 years now, and we very frequently sort of like talk about these our common interests. I'm based at the University of California, Los Angeles, and Paul is a little bit further up in California, Stanford, so it's not such a long way. Anyway, also 6 years ago, I curated Paul's sort of like a midlife retrospective exhibition, which was shown in the United States and actually in my native country, Finland, as well. So these thoughts are based on a sort of like a fairly long, shall we say, dialogue with Paul. I call Paul with the word thinkerer, and I'll explain you in just a moment what I mean by thinkerer. Anyway, I'll start with this picture showing Paul not doing the fascist salute, obviously, but giving a performance here at Ars Electronica in the early 1990s. That was actually one of the first times I saw Paul perform with Laetitia Sonami, the work called Mechanization Takes Command. And those of you who know media history know that this is also the title of one of the greatest classics of sort of like a technological history by Sigrid Gideon, book from 1948, so which is a big favorite of both mine and Paul's. And this was a work using a data glove that had been hacked and turned into an interactive sound interface. Paul has had many links with Ars Electronica over the years, and actually the first time I saw his work probably was this installation Unsettling Matter, which was shown in 1991. Since then, so he did the performance, and he has actually won three distinctions at the Prix Ars Electronica for Fireflies, Rain Dance, and Firebirds, and now finally the Golden Nika for the Messenger. Okay, so what is thinkerer? I think it is a new word, a combination of thinker and tinkerer. And to sort of like give you an idea what I mean about this, so let me take you on a brief virtual trip to Paul's studio on the Stanford University campus. This is some private snapshots I took in 2003. So you see here Paul and his assistant surrounded by all the things, all the stuff he has around him. And this is like a peek. I didn't ask for a permission from Paul, actually. So it's like a little peek at his storage. So you see all these devices, all kinds of strange devices and machine parts and things. And out of many of these things, you hardly have an idea what they mean. With these machine parts, he has a lot of videotapes and DVDs and books, more or less sort of like strange, obscure volumes, some of them that he finds from like second-hand bookshops or strange antique stores in Tallinn, Estonia, or things like that, and some of that from Stanford University Library. So it looks like a mess, but it actually is a pretty organized research laboratory. This is a device, a rotating device for manometric flame experiments that he makes, and these were cages for the piece Firebirds, which he was still working on at that point, so the one that got the honorary mention last year. I think what's interesting is that to see that Paul is a very particular kind of an artist. So he explores media technology. He's very interested in the history, but equally interested in contemporary media. So he's equally interested in low technology, high technology. He does much work with what we might call material artifacts, but he's also very interested in theories and discourses. So like bridging all these different layers that we should consider when we think about the history of technology. And also I would say he investigates both their possibilities and their impossibilities. reconstructs things and makes interesting discoveries. So, and as an example, I would just like to show you a few stills from one of his less-known works, which is called Five Foxhole Radios, so which is basically a series of installation objects that are perfectly functioning radio sets that Paul put together out of the most improbable everyday objects, like bags of bubble gum and finished bottles of whiskey and non-functioning light bulbs with pencils and anything you can imagine. And this is, I think, the tinkering side of Paul's work. But it is not just about playing, you know, like with these strange things. There is a certain kind of an idea behind it. This is how Paul himself spoke about the piece Five Foxhole Radios, describing the stuff first. Any kinds of things, including discarded AOL CD discs and things like that. But what these things tell are not just about the kind of the possibilities of this junk technology, but really about a certain kind of vision of technological history. The fact that, for instance, in the Second World War, soldiers were encouraged to make these radio sets out of these incredibly low and low-tech ingredients and things like that. And that is something that, in Paul's way of thinking, actually leads to a much, much bigger way of this sort of like hidden aspect of the technological history. So it's not only about Bill Gates, but it is also many things that Bill Gates would never have even dreamed about, but which Paul obviously is able to even to build. So he characterizes his way of working as Edisonian, so of course referring to the famous inventor Thomas Edison. Edison is very well known for not having followed a strictly scientific method. So you probably know that he didn't have a formal education in science at all. So Edison's method was strictly experimental. So Edison gathered in his laboratory all possible materials, things, anything you can imagine. And when he wanted to invent something, so then he just tried to put these things together. Either it worked or it didn't. If it didn't, he took another kind of material. This is how Edison invented his light bulb, for instance. So, and he meticulously wrote down the results of each and every experiment. And this is the way how Paul feels about his own work with these technologies. And he started very early. This is one of the very early pieces by Paul from 1973 called the Pygmy Gamelan, which was another sort of like tinkered sort of like device between a sort of like tinkerer's object and an art object. And this probably also takes me to another term from, so, tinkerer to a media archaeologist, which I also sort of like call myself. So we are pretty much dealing on the same field, and there are others. Yesterday we saw Toshio Iwai's wonderful performance, and I think that I feel very close to Toshio as well. And Toshio, I probably feel close to Paul. Paul feels close to Toshio, and things like that. There's something, some similarity in the way of thinking. And I would also probably think that Zach's work also fits perfectly with some of these things that I'm talking about. And so Paul, the way he works is that he makes these experiments in his studio with all the possible things and materials he finds from anywhere you can imagine. But he also does a lot of archival research. And a major source for his art are the patent archives. So he goes and looks at forgotten patents, tries to imagine if they are just totally crazy and impractical, or whether there's something there that is a sort of like an unused possibility for culture. And that's how he has found some sort of like inventors who were sort of like basically bypassed history, like Elisha Gray. I'm trying to make, I have a few more slides, and then I'll show you some examples of these works. Anyway, so Elisha Gray, to try to be very brief, he was the sort of like the great lost and loser of media history in the sense that he invented the telephone, but obviously came to the patent office a few hours after Alexander Graham Bell. And he got all the fame and fortune and things, and Elisha Gray was wiped out from the pages of history. Paul found Elisha Gray again, started reading his proposals, and found out that his rather eccentric ideas, like the musical bathtub, which was the basis of his idea about the telephone, is actually a perfectly functional technology, even though nobody tried to do it in practice. So Paul went on to this idea of like using the human skin and the bathtub as a sort of like electric conduit. And he took another idea from Gray, which was the wash basin transmitter, just using normal wash basins and turns them into sort of like a loudspeakers. And produced this installation work called the Gray Matter, in which is basically, as you can see in the front, you see the wash bathtub installation. At the back, you see two examples of these wash basin receivers. And because of his amazing tinkering skills, he could show that Elisha Gray's device is perfectly functional as an invention, even though history forgot him. But now it's sort of like resurrected on the level of media art. And I think that's quite fascinating. Here are some couple of other pictures. So I think that in some sense he emulates the idea of an artist as an inventor. But I think that maybe we should talk about artist as a meta-inventor. And so it's very essential for Paul that everything he does functions perfectly. So he needs to understand the technology. But because he is an artist and not a scientist or a historian, he has all this interesting freedom to imagine. So I think that what he does happens in this sphere of what if. Okay, I'll say a few words about the Peace Messenger now that Paul has been working and improving from 1998 to 2005. So as Karen already mentioned, this work shows us three parallel telegraph systems. All are sort of like imaginary, but at the same time, they are perfectly functional. And what happens is that all the email that is sent to Paul's inbox, including the... I'm up, but I don't know what happened to the projector. No problems here. Okay. Anyway, so... So all the email that's sent to Paul's inbox is read aloud letter by letter by these three systems. And these rather strange systems, as also was mentioned, were inspired by Paul's discovery of this rather forgotten Catalan scientist, Don Francisco Salva y Campillo, and his ideas about the telegraph, also by work of Elisha Gray. Now, I'm not going to go through this, just that to mention that Don Francisco de Salva y Campillo presented several interesting ideas for telecommunication, for telegraphy, at the time when such systems didn't exist yet. So they were just about to come. And one of these ideas was this very, very strange thing where you have like 26 different wires, and you would send, sort of like using a Leyden jar, to send electric impulses. And in the end of each wire, you would actually have a servant, a human person, who would be given electric shocks. And each person would be assigned one letter of the alphabet. So when you felt the shock, you would say A. The other one would say C. Third one would say S. And then there would be the 27th person writing down the message. And this was a very inspiring inspiration for Paul, because he started thinking about the sort of like idea about communication system in non-democratic regimes this inventor was thinking about. So where the messages only come from somewhere, but there's no feedback channel, because that doesn't exist in an authoritarian society. Another idea was to use these... electrolytic jars with letters inside. So every time when the circuit was closed, there would be hydrogen bubbles in a jar. And again, there would be somebody running around the sort of like the line of these jars, writing down the message. So of course, these are rather absurd ideas. And I think that this absurdity really inspired Paul. And he was also linking this with the ideas by Franz Kafka's novels, you know, about the messenger that never gets anywhere, things like that. Okay. I'm probably getting close to my... How much? Okay, fine. Okay, good. Okay, so what's interesting for you to understand is that this is a piece that is about technology. There's an interesting technological idea. He shows that in some sense those proposals made by this forgotten inventor are actually functional things. But at the same time, Paul puts them in a sort of like much wider sort of like cultural and ideological context, which is a sort of like an integral part of the piece. So the piece really talks about the life, the existence of those systems within a sort of like a social and political context, rather than just about this technology itself. And I have here just two quotations from Paul's writing about the piece, which I think are both quite revealing. In The Messenger, I take the telegraph as a point of departure from which to examine the relationship between electricity and democracy and how electrical telecommunication technologies have participated in our solidarity and in our isolation, in our equality and our oppression, in the richness of our experience and the uncertainty of our lives. So he really kind of like forces us to also think about this enigmatic presence of the internet in that piece. Why is internet involved in a way where there is no real feedback channel? It's just as a, like something like a push media type of a situation. I'm not going to give you any sort of like a close reading, but I'd just rather read this open. And my final kind of like a quotation is something that I personally found really, really fascinating. So actually what Paul imagines that installation to be is a sort of like a colonial telegraph office somewhere, you know, in the middle of nowhere, maybe Mexico or somewhere there. And you can imagine a telegraph officer sweating in the heat, and the messages keep on coming from distant capital cities, you know. Maybe they are written down, maybe they are not. Basically, it's an all absurd situation. So, and this is a very Kafka, a Franz Kafka-like situation. So Paul writes beautifully. In this imaginary colonial telegraph reception hall, messages are received from inaccessible capitals, commands that have lost their meaning. By careful observation and transcription of the sounds and movements, we can make out some words and phrases sent by someone to someone pertaining to what we cannot discover. So it is actually something that turns into almost like a Beckettian fantasy, like a Samuel Beckettian fantasy in the end. And this is what I appreciate this piece, that it is not something that it is totally easy, you know. It's not a one-liner. It's far from that. It is a culturally informed piece that works on many, many levels of readings. And I think that there are many ways of interpreting it in other than what Paul proposes himself. Now, if I failed my time, so I will stop, or I can show some moving image. Okay, I think this should be fine. So hopefully this is functions as a kind of an introduction to Paul's background and to the work. I didn't want to show you any video anyway of the piece, because it's always best to go there, spend time, think about these things, experience the work itself. Thank you very much.